You know what's really elevated my sex life? Taking the time to heal from this shit show and growing that self-confidence, because
my fucking girl. Welcome on to Date or Not, Baby. So, wait, what are you doing drinking? I wanted to cheers.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
All right, so
ready?
As tradition, we're going to cheers.
Cheers.
So cheers. Clinkity clink.
You got to tap?
Don't hit my pop filter.
I was told that you have to make eye contact before
you. Oh, is that a thing?
Yeah.
Is that like an American thing?
I don't know. That's what I was recently told.
Oh. Mm. Well, Amanda, so I don't know how much you want to go into this, but
let's get into it.
Okay, well, so I have to first ask, who are you? Tell the fans.
Well, what exactly do you want me to tell them?
Just who are you? Like, what do you do? Like, go into like who you are.
Okay, so I'm Amanda. I'm born and raised here in Orange County. Mm-hmm. I'm your typical blonde Orange County girl. Beautiful. I drive a white Jetta. I mean, come on.
I used to drive a Jetta, but mine was black like my soul.
I do hair full time. I basically talk and make people pretty for a living. It's amazing.
Really quick though, do you remember how we met?
We met at Spin.
Is that how we met?
At the studio.
Oh my gosh, dude.
I don't like remember exactly like when it was. Mm-hmm. Remember like seeing people tag you and being like, that girl spells her name really interesting.
The Y fucks with everyone.
And I was like, but I want to meet her. She seems so cool. And then we became friends. And I feel like when I met you, like, you were one of those people that, like, I instantly connected with. And, like, instantly, like we became instant friends. Like, it was just easy. Like, remember the day we snuck into the Hyatt together?
Fuck. Dude, and was that the first time that we had actually...
That was the first time we'd ever hung out, like, just the two of us. Like, yeah. I feel like we'd hung out with the girls, like... many a time before mm-hmm. that. And then I was like, hey, what are you doing? Like, I went and took a class at HB, and then you're like, oh, you were doing something at Tustin, and sure. I was like, let's go sneak into the Hyatt. Last summer or two summers ago?
I think it was two summers ago, because this summer and I think the summer before that, we just like spent time by the pool, because we've been in quarantine, and we quarantined ourselves, and it was just like, I think like two or three of us that spent time by the pool this summer. Last summer before that, I think that we had like pool days all the time. And I believe that it was the year before that that we probably did that, because I think that we'd probably been friends for maybe 3 years at this point. But
has it been that long? I love it.
I know. I do too. But it feels like it's been a lot longer, because I feel like, again, like we just are always able to communicate. Like the amount of times I FaceTime you, or like you FaceTime me and call.
But I feel like, you know, you've met a good friend when it's just like easy.
You know why?
You're like my soul sister.
It's because we're both Sagittarius.
Shut up. Is that really why?
I don't know. Sonali and I, in the last episode, we went down this like weird rabbit hole of astrology and then like psychology, like all in one, because it's like a way to like psychoanalyze people almost. And I don't know enough about it, but I just like, I'm always like ranting like, it's Sag season, baby, because I'm turning 30, you know, so it's... Yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't know. But anyways.
No. Are you one of those people that I know nothing about astrology, but like I'll find out when like the person I'm dating's birthday is, and then I'll look up, are Sagittarians compatible with this? And I don't know a whole lot about astrology, obviously, but I'm always like, ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But okay. Funny story. So
laid on me. No balance, baby.
So just so everyone knows, I lost my virginity at 13. Like, let's just come out and
what
say
a who heir. I'm just kidding. You're not get a baby.
I grew up. I had a 16-year-old boyfriend at the time. Anyway,
wow, you're so bad.
So I once. Do you remember J14 magazine? Like back in the day.
No, bitch. I'm not even from this country.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, anyway, so I used to read J14 magazine. Mm-hmm. Kaylee will know exactly what I'm talking about, and who I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay,
but anyway, J14 magazine told me when I was 13 that I would find love at the end of June, and I lost my virginity to the man that I found love with at the end of June that year.
Wow.
But not until November.
That is pretty funny. That's very random.
Anyway,
very
has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
That's okay.
I just thought I
matter.
Would share it with you.
No, I love it. But I think in the vein of like relationships, I think one of the things that we used to like always talk about, and where this kind of like podcast stemmed from was from kind of the relation of addiction. And I know I feel like that just kind of like took a fucking turn. We're all like talking about astrology and we go into addiction, right? But yeah. I think I know that you have dated multiple people in the past that like, again, it had heavy like drug addiction and abuse past for you. And so it's been extremely traumatizing. Mm-hmm. So we used to always have conversations. And I remember one of the first times I think you might have disclosed any of that too was when we went to the Hyatt.
I think so,
yeah. On the drive over. I just like directly remember when we were parking your car, you just started talking about, you know, the person that you were with who was continuing calling you and, you know, things, drastic things that happened. And you started opening about that story. And then after that, I think it had been maybe like a year later, I'd experienced my first, not like witness, but my first like dating encounter with somebody who had a very like heavy drug past. And it wasn't until kind of after that, you know, ended that I was like, I had come to you or like you had come over on one of my lunch breaks. So I was still so broken about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Amanda, like, I need to kind of talk to you about this because I feel like you will kind of understand it. And everything that you had said or replied to me with, or you kind of nodded your head in, it gave me kind of peace in realizing that that situation was not me. It was the other person dealing with their like kind of traumas.
Right.
And something that I kind of like wanted to, so I'll give like everybody a background who really doesn't know. I think my immediate friends kind of know the situation that I was in, but earlier this year, I'd actually fallen in love with somebody who I had later found out had been like a heroin addict for 10 years. Now, in the trajectory of this relationship, we had probably collectively dated for about 6 months, but it wasn't until like a few months in that, fast forward the story, it was N. We talked about this in, I think, episode one, but mm-hmm. We were out at a very nice dinner. And I think at one point he was always chewing tobacco. And like, it was not a problem. My parents were smokers their entire lives, but it wasn't until that, like, there was a point that he had like kissed me and it bothered me. I'm like, I don't care that you do it. It's just like, I don't want to taste it.
Kissing an ashtray is not sexy.
It isn't. But I mean, even if it's like mint tasted or tainted, whatever, like that's not something that I want to taste or feel, right? Like that's just for somebody like me who like literally just casually drinks and has maybe touched like 4 cigarettes in her entire life and never done drugs. Like it's a different feel. And I'm not saying that like I'm this like a goody two shoes that's not open to the idea. It's just I've never had a need or want to like essentially really dive into like drugs or psychedelics and things like that. So again, same. Right? And so again, like when you kind of like meet somebody that has this past, you almost don't know how to navigate the waters. And in this scenario, we had finished dinner. Obviously we had been dating and we'd kind of like started already talking about like being exclusive. But when he was like chewing again at the table, I had just out of nowhere just been like, you know, have you ever been addicted to drugs in the past? Don't know where the question came from, but it was something that kind of like arose. And there, again, like there was no spark in it. He had no, like, at least to my knowledge at the time, no like real tendencies that were like drug, quote unquote, drug tendencies, right?
Right, right.
It was just something
addictive
that I had
tendencies.
Asked. Total. I mean, for what I, now that I understand that there were, right? But at the time I didn't pin the two and two together. By the way, you can feel free to like crack that bottle open.
I mean, I'm almost done and then we'll open the bottle. I don't even have to like, no. I don't have to use my ex-server skills. I like the screw
no,
top.
No, baby. We got screw tops are sometimes easier like here because I don't have to open the bottle. Like just at your own leisure, you can pour.
I love it.
Drinking wine, baby. Okay, back to the story. So we had finished dinner. We're walking and he goes into this full trajectory of like his whole like drug past, again, his heroin addiction for 10 years, his like ex was an alcoholic. So it was just like a lot of turmoil, a lot of like breakups and get back togethers, had a lot of like death in the family, a lot of suicide in the family, a lot of addiction too, because he came from like a really religious household, broke out of that religion. Now, you know, obviously like his family's still religious, but he still dealt with all these things. Like he had family members that again had committed, family members that had like committed suicide in multiples,
right.
And a lot of it stemmed from like all those addictions. And it was kind of like the first time that we had like talked about like something so serious and so daunting and so like, I think like defining in that relationship. Now in that relationship about 2 days later that it like we had ended things, like for some reason, like after that dinner, he had disclosed all his personal information and then he just kind of was like, and again, it wasn't anything that was like secretive from anybody that knew him. It was just, mm-hmm. We were new and he was like, he had said, he was like, you know, I was kind of tired. It's like me with kids, tired of repeating the story over and over again, because at some point, like, you have to define your narrative. For sure. Because that was his narrative for a very long time, he just decided that that's not something that I want to talk about on, like, first dates or people that I'm, no, not first dates, but people that I'm really dating until it becomes necessary. Anyways, so long story short, like, this is, at this point in the relationship, this was the second time that we were back together. Now, obviously, like, things had ended. Fast forward, a couple weeks goes by, and then he's, you know, hitting me up again. We're texting. He comes over, like, speeding this up. He comes over. He's, like, literally just, like, bawling at my kitchen table. He's, like, you know, like, I always thought it was, like, the kids thing. I want to be with you, blah, blah, blah. Trust me, the drugs come in at one point. He's, like, I want to be with you, X, Y, and Z. He stays the night. And at this point, he still hasn't told me he loved me yet. Okay. Well, that night, he goes, you know how I feel about you, right? And I go, no. I knew, but... what am I supposed to say? Oh, you love me? No, like, that seems like very fucking vain.
Right.
But, like, so I'm like, no, I don't. And so he tells me, he's like, Maria, like, I'm in love with you. And I looked at him and I was like, holy shit, like, deer in headlights, my fucking tears just fall out of my eyeballs. And obviously I was in love with him. Like, everybody knew.
Right.
And I thought at this point, I was like, I just felt like I had met, like, a match, right? Like, somebody that I could, like, really see, like, me being with for a very long time. However, yeah, we had differences in what we wanted, like, in our future. It was somebody that I was so compatible with that I just couldn't imagine it going any other way, right? And so anyway, I knew this early on, and I mean, I didn't tell him I loved him early on, but I held on to those feelings. So obviously I said it back. He's sitting there and he's like, you know, I want you, like, just to be exclusively mine, like, my girlfriend, my everything. And I was like, and
of,
like,
course, that's what we want to hear. If we feel that same way, we're like, hallelujah. Okay, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. But you know, what's interesting is I literally looked at him because I think I logically knew that this seemed like another pattern, right? Because now at this point, especially after that heroin story, I was like, these are patterns that I'm starting to pick up. So, like, and I looked at him and I go, you need to be sure. So I need you to take time. Mm-hmm. Mind you, 2 days later, he literally hits me with a JK, LOL, enter. And he's like, sorry. Well, I don't know, Maria, I don't know what you want me to say, but I'm just really, like, I feel like I'm not really, like, into you like you are into me. And I looked at him, I go, and you told me that you were in love with me, laying here looking at me while I was the one who told you that, like, you need to take the time to think about, like, if this is what you want to do. And so a statement that really resonated with me, and I remember telling you this at the table, he calls his dad and he goes, you know, why can't I have this feeling of this perfect person, this perfect connection, but also this obsessive feeling, like this honeymoon phase that you really get when you just first meet somebody? And mind you, in quarantine, all you can do is literally sit in between four walls and really get to know somebody. So mind you, him and I were spending almost every day together. We were sitting in within four walls. So all we did was communicate. We just talked for 8 hours a day or however much. Right. We texted all day. We called each other. Mm-hmm. We talked in person. We weren't doing things. We weren't going out. We weren't going anywhere. We'd go, like, to the grocery store and pick up liquor and just, like, sit and hang out. But it was just me and him. And then I'd come home and I'd be with my roommates. And that was it. Wasn't seeing my parents. You know, the studio was closed. This was it. So your relationship accelerates. And so for him to even think that honeymoon phase was going to even last past the 6 months is completely delusional, right?
Right.
And so anyways, you came over and I remember, whatever, long story short, that relationship obviously ends. And it had been months at this point and I'm, like, distraught. I don't know what to do. Like, I'm still thinking about this person because I'm hanging on to this narrative of, why would somebody tell me that they loved me? And 2 days later, they throw middle fingers up and they're like, LOL, fooled ya.
You know why? They were on a high.
Lay it on me.
It's a high.
It's a fucking high. And that's what you told me. And so what I started to understand is that, like, this person is, addicts are typically desperate to cope in whatever capacity. And even mm-hmm. though, even though that they're recovering or they have recovered, he had been sober for 5 years, he still dealt with the ups and downs because he's so used to, like, all these dopamine and cortisol levels going off in his brain from all the drugs. And for 10 years while you're developing, like, that's scary because that changes your brain chemistry. It affects your nervous system. It is something that is so detrimental to who you are and how you function on a daily basis. Now, I knew that when I talked to you, I was like, I can't be crazy. Like, there's no way that I'm looking into this situation and not necessarily, and, like, understanding this improperly. And so I started to realize, like, after talking to you, it's, you know, something that you told me was like, this person, again, is so used to having his highs that he's going to consistently tell you, oh, he loves you. The next day he doesn't, he pulls away. But then a week later, he's going to tell you that one more time. And so you go through this like detriment of a relationship.
It's an emotional roller coaster.
Absolutely. But for somebody that's sober, that doesn't, there's no norm there, right?
But I mean, if you're, think about this. And I mean, obviously this is, I'm not saying, oh, you're adding fuel to the fire, but
sure.
You're sitting there drinking with an addict. So mm-hmm. Clearly they're not actually sober. I mean, a lot of people will argue this. I want to say I am no expert on addiction. Yeah. I have a lot of personal experience with addiction. So, I have a lot of recovered addicts who work on their recovery every single day in my life. And I've had a lot of conversations with them. And sometimes people will tell you that clean and sober need to live in the same house. Now, it sounds like N was clean, but not necessarily sober. So, I mean, that could be active addiction.
Sure. Yeah, you know what? And you're kind of right. Because like in the time, but, and I think that that's where the alcohol comes in, because mm-hmm. we've had really messy times in the beginning of a relationship. And I think I told you, remember that like housewarming that we went to? Did I tell you about this?
I don't remember.
Long story short, I went to like a singular housewarming, and there were maybe like, you know, like seven of us there or whatever. But so in my mind, we're going to have a couple drinks. We're going to leave. We're just kind of saying hi. We're bringing people a couple of beers, some food, whatever. But he ends up taking shots when I'm not looking. He's drinking a ton with all my friends. And I think that part of it was him being nervous. But it is not a situation that you get wasted in. It's as if like you and I are sitting here and I just go to the bathroom, take 10 shots, come out trash. And you're like, Maria, we're running a podcast. Like, why are you trashed? I'm literally one glass of wine in, right? Like you're sitting here trying to piece the puzzle together. And it was so bad that like I literally pulled up to his house. He opens the door. He gets out of a moving vehicle. He storms into his home. I have to like park my car far. I walk in the house. He's like so trashed that I have to like pick him up off the floor and like lay him on the bed. Wakes up at 2 a.m. and he's like apologizing to me, not even knowing how he got his clothes off or in the bed. And I'm like livid. Mind you, we've been together for like a couple months. That's not something I should be experiencing, right? So no. Again, that's where I think the tendencies kind of like fall in. And he's even had issues with like different like different like painkillers and such that he'd been given for like a molar or something like that. And he was just like, I can't take this because I know what it's going to do. So I think that part of him kind of knew that this was an issue that he would have.
Right.
But,
there's yeah. there's no 50. It's 0 to 100 mm-hmm. is what it sounds like to me.
100%. And so some of the things that I kind of wanted to run by you because, well, not run by you, but something that I sent to you after N and I kind of ended that really resonated with me and that really opened my eyes, I think, for the first time was that, and I'll kind of like lay these on you, but like I said earlier, right, addiction is a person's own attempt to regulate their own nervous system. So it's a coping mechanism, essentially, obviously, because, you know, the person is like desperate to cope in whatever capacity, right. Whether that be the drug or the experience.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's really not the addiction to the substance, but a certain emotional state and the nervous system activation that they're drawn to. What I had read, I remember what I'd read and what I'd sent you was that there were like a ton of studies done on like addict groups, and essentially what they disclosed, what I talked about earlier, is they're always looking for a chase. So
exactly.
No matter what they're doing, no matter what, like, issue that they're in, there's always like this fear of being caught that they're aware that they're like fighting, and then it's like a fight or flight mechanism that really gets released. And then so because of like the adrenaline and cortisol release, that they've like battled their entire life, mm-hmm. that's what's causing the boredom and agitation. So which kind of makes sense, which when N told his dad, he goes, why can't I have this kind of like perfect person but also have this like obsessive feeling, right? That where he feels because there's no obsessive compulsive feeling, that's where the boredom comes in.
Well, I mean, it's a chemical imbalance in the brain.
Yeah.
If you want to get really scientific with it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, man, addiction, she's an ugly bitch.
She fucking is.
She is an ugly bitch.
And I know that, like, for you, like, there's so much that you've experienced in your past. Because, like you said, right, there's been 6 years where you have dealt on and off with people in your life. Not only, like, friends and family, I'm sure, but, like, relationships. And again, you can disclose as, like, much and little as you want. But okay. I figured that you have such good insight on what it's like to, like, date somebody that's an addict and also, like, a recovering addict. Because you've totally. Dealt with both, and both have similar tendencies, and both have their own demons. Mm-hmm. And I know that, obviously, you're not the only one in this world that's essentially dealing with that. And I think that for those people that are dealing with it, like, I want them to at least realize that they're not alone. Or for people that maybe, like, in the future that can hear this, they can realize that, like, if there is somebody in their future relationship that does have addictive tendencies, they at least know what to look out for and how to react.
Definitely.
So I'll kind of, like, let you, like, take the wheel and...
So, I mean, I want to start out by saying addiction is a disease. And I'm not trying to, in this situation, I don't want to bash. I don't want to totally bash addiction. I mean, mm-hmm. there are so many sides to it. Again, I have so many recovered addicts in my life who are wonderful people. I have clients. I have very close friends. I have family. And I mean, I've grown up with a lot of addiction in my life. And I mean, it was, as a child, it was, you know, farther, like, grandparents, other relatives. I mean, my mom is one of 7 children. There are only 3 of them that are not on some sort of alcoholism, pills, haven't been in jail because of drugs. So
I had no fucking idea.
Really?
Yeah. Actually didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
Or the extent, I should say.
My mom is number 6 of 7.
Damn.
And I love her so much. I mean, she is like me. We are a little crazy. But I mean, she grew up with it too. And I think she has a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I will definitely tell you, you know, at the end of my story, you will get it. But I have a lot of trauma. And, you know, back to what I'm saying is addiction is a disease. So I'm not trying to, quote unquote, shit on addiction or people who have experienced it. It is a chemical imbalance in the brain. It is genetic. It's ugly, no matter what way you want to play it. So... I mean, that's just kind of how I want to preface this. I don't want to go into it 100% with a negative connotation. Yeah. Now, what I'm about to tell you, it is a negative connotation. But I also want people to know that there is a bright side to it. If you do decide to get help and you do, you know, I'm a firm believer in AA. I have plenty of people in my life who have been so successful with AA. I think it's amazing. I have, you know, a very close friend that he... goes on AA retreats and he goes to meetings every week and these are his people and he's got this support system and you know, him and his wife are some very dear friends of mine and they've gone through some gnarly tragedy over the last few years and you know what? They're rock solid because he's rock solid in his recovery. So, you know, I want to share my story because I want other people to know that they're not alone. I felt very alone. So, I have been in 2 relationships with 2 men who struggle with addiction. The first one I met when I think I was 22. I'm 28. I'll be 29 next week. Fellow Sagittarian.
Sag season.
So I met him when I was 22. I met him at work. He was also a fellow stylist. We did not get along when we met. And then it was kind of like one of those, like, playful, like, ooh, you're cute and I don't like you and I want to be mean to you kind of things. And I mean, long story short, you know, over time we grew to be friends. We started dating and he opened up to me about his struggle with addiction. He was a model when he was younger. I mean, he was beautiful. He was 6'2", covered in tattoos. Now, both of these men begin with a J, so we're going to call him J1.
I like it.
Jawan.
Ooh, it's a little sexy flair on it. I like it.
So he was a model, you know, and he was thrown into the whole LA kind of runway, whatever sort of situation. And so when I met him, I couldn't even tell you now how many years clean he was, but... what I found out over time is he didn't ever work a program. Now, like I said before, I'm a firm believer in NA and AA because I do see people who have had great success with it. it is a personal choice. I do have other people in my life who have chosen to, stick to their sobriety in other ways. That's totally fine. Amazing. Good for them. However, I strongly believe that he would have benefited from this. And so we had this blissful, happy relationship, you know, for a while, but then the cracks begin to show.
Yeah.
And he unfortunately lost his mother and he was on the verge of losing his father. And
from addiction or other things?
No, his mom kind of died in sort of a freak situation, really sad. And then his father had cancer. Okay. He was a wonderful man. I got to spend, and I'm so thankful, I still, you know, love this man to death, but I got to spend the last 2 years of his life with him while I was dating his son. And it'll still haunt me, but I remember the last New Year's I spent with him, I said, he asked me, can you please promise to take care of my son? That kind of shatters me now because I am no longer in contact with his son. I had to put up some boundaries. We
good.
Yeah. We did remain friends after our relationship ended, but it was not, it was a toxic friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll explain all this as we go. So, you know, we had been together for a little while. He was very open and honest with me, telling me, you know, I have a past experience with drugs. I've played with A, B, and C, but my last drug of choice was heroin. So
we love a heroin addict.
It's very common.
Yeah.
It's very common. And I mean, I have never tried a single drug. I've never even seen a drug in my life. Now, yeah. I like alcohol and I'm a huge pothead, but I mean, it's legal. It's not a drug anymore.
Decrim, baby.
But, and as you know, things started to get harder and harder and harder, the cracks began to show into our relationship and into his personality. Now, he was a smoker. He smoked cigarettes. He smoked lots of cigarettes. And I found out probably 6 months into our relationship that he was heavily addicted to Suboxone.
Okay.
Now, Suboxone is synthetic methadone, I believe. I probably should do a little more research on this, but this is just based on what he had told me. And usually...
So I think it's... Well, isn't it used to...
It's used to wean...
It's an opiate treatment, right?
It's used in treatment to wean opiate addicts off of the actual opiate.
Yeah. The last person that I dated was, like, heavily on Suboxone, too. But I think that he had to, like, cut himself off.
That's... So... Oh, there's a whole science behind that that I feel like you and I will never understand.
No.
But he was heavily addicted to Suboxone. And... I mean, I saw it. I saw it. So... I mean, I'm going to be really honest. I think with the trauma and I think with the time, you know, it's been a minute since we've been together. There's a kind of a lot of our relationship that doesn't stand out to me anymore. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I now, 6 years later, almost 7 years later, I struggle with anxiety. Now, I do in some capacity believe that anxiety is contagious. I was never an anxious person before I dated this man. Never. I was kind of like, what's anxiety? Like, I'm fine. Now, I mean, I pop CBD candy like they're candy at this point. Well, not candy, but they're CBD gummies and they taste like candy. But this is so that I don't have to take anti-anxiety meds.
Yeah.
But he was constantly like, there were a lot of like weird mannerisms that he explained to me later. Like, he didn't always know what to do with his hands. And that's why he was a smoker, because he was used to constantly like
mouth pleasure, mouth hand pleasure.
Mouth hand pleasure. And kind of like with different drugs, there's different things. And it was just, there was a lot of like, there was always candy. So one thing that I have learned is when you stop drinking, your body craves sugar. So
really?
Yes.
Why I have did I not seen know this?
I have seen this a lot in my life with the addicts in my life. Huh. I mean, not forever, but like your body craves sugar. So
do you know why? Is there like a mental...
There's got to be a science behind it. I'm going to be totally honest with you. I don't know what the science is behind it, but there has to be something. So there was always so much candy involved in our relationship. I mean, we would go to the movies and it would be like, I remember going to the movies and hiding candy in my sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Because he was kind of a cheap ass too. But anyway, about a year into our relationship, his father passed away. Mm-hmm. And this is where things really started to go downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And the manipulation and the you'll never understand why my brain works this way and why, you know, why I do this and why I do that. And there was always the discussion of the like, oh, I'm going to get off my medicine, quote unquote, which was the Suboxone.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where the abuse came into play. Now, I'm going to be honest. I don't remember. There was a point in our relationship where we had broken up, but we were still working together. We were both hairdressers.
Yeah.
And we tried to make it work and we tried to remain friends. And then we ended up getting back together. And I want to say it was before his dad died. Anyway, that was where the emotional and the verbal abuse began. So my whole story today is addiction and abuse. And so I want to talk about, you know, the ugly addiction, but I also want to talk about how it leads to abuse.
Okay. So in your relationship, like marrying the two, what were patterns that you were seeing in J1's relationship, right, that you started to pinpoint? You're like, holy shit, this is repetitive. But you start to realize that it's either like a substitute for the drug or like you became the drug, right? And then what kind of abuse did you experience? If you don't mind like getting raw and real with me, like yeah, was sure. It like mental, emotional, physical? Like, do you want to just kind of like cover all those bases?
So, okay. Where do I start here? Let's talk about when his dad passed away.
Okay.
So he was the kind of person that had to pour his emotions into work. Okay. He got to a point with me where he had completely turned his emotions off. So that was where the emotional abuse started.
Yeah.
And I remember his dad passed away. He sent me a text and I called him and we were not working together in the same salon at the time. I had moved on and he had been somewhere else and it was just for the better. And I was like, are you okay? And he's like, it's fine. Stay at work. Like, this is just how I have to cope. And so a few days went by and I always spent Sunday nights with him. And so that Sunday, because Sunday, Mondays were our days off anyway. So I spent that Sunday with him and I remember we went to the mall and we were sitting at CPK. I haven't been to CPK in a hot minute. Mm-hmm. But he's like, yeah, you're not going to stay with me tonight. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, I'm working 14 hours a day. I hardly ever see you. You're working 14 hours a day. Like, this is our day off together. This is our routine. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, I need time to grieve. And I'm a very loving, caring person. And if you had talked to me about this at the end of the relationship, I would tell you like, oh, I messed up. Like, I was being overly supportive. Now I don't feel like that. I feel like I was being the loving, caring person that I am. And I was questioning why somebody was trying to push me away.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't want you staying with me. I need my time. I need my space. And I mean, I didn't get that. I was like, wait, yeah. Hello, I love you. I'm trying to help you. What's your deal here? And we end up, I was driving. I don't know why we drove my car that day, but I was driving and I remember driving home and he was like, you're not staying with me. You're going home. And he goes, starts screaming at me. What the fuck is wrong with you? You're not fucking listening to me. You don't love me. Fuck you, you fucking cunt.
Wow.
Oh. I just remember I was crying so hard. I was screaming back at him. Who talks to somebody they supposedly love like yeah. that? So I feel like that is where it started. And it was almost like it opened the door to the abuse. Mm-hmm. And that night, I remember we went back to his house. I got my stuff and I went and stayed with my best friend. I called my best friend and I said, I can't go home.
Yeah.
But I can't stay here. Can I please come stay with you? And he wouldn't let me come back the next morning. He's like, fuck you. You're a fucking piece of shit. And I'm like, whoa, whoa. I love you. I have a big heart. I'm just trying to help.
Yeah.
And again, this was a while ago. So I don't totally 100% remember like how it all played out. But the patterns were at this point, he basically just turned himself off. He would be like, oh, I love you, but I don't want to touch you. Or I love you, but like, I don't want you here. And I'm like, what?
They were like, everything that he said was very contradicting.
It was very contradictory. And it was toxic. And it was just like, I mean, I remember he always talked about how depressed he was. And I was like, okay, let's get you help. Like, you're obviously crying for help.
But he was actively on his sobriety at this point, correct? So,
okay.
Except for the Suboxone, which...
Except for the Suboxone. He was still on Suboxone. And the Suboxone would physically mess with him. It would mess with his stomach. It would mess with his moods. He was the moodiest human being ever. Yeah. But he would go. So in the beginning of our relationship, I still remember him sending a text asking me, like, why can't we be married already? Like, we were on an uphill high. Mm-hmm. And then something would happen with work, or a client would piss him off, or, you know, his dad wouldn't be doing so well, and he would come crashing down. Mm-hmm. And then he would get high again, and crashing down.
Yeah.
It was weird. And then it was just... This went on for a long time. And then, you know, he never physically harmed me, but he took all of this, like, the honeymoon phase ended and he took all of that away from me. He played with my emotions. It was just nothing.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we eventually broke up because we were clearly not on the same page. And we remained friends. And I mean, we started sleeping together, and I mean, it was just sex at this point, and mm-hmm. I was emotionally unattached in some form, but I did still love him, and I still loved him for a long time. But then that summer, we did a wedding together, and I had run into an old coworker, and now we'll call him J2. Mm-hmm. And I had worked with him when I was 18. We were servers together. I always was super attracted to him. Big, yep. Beautiful blue eyes. Mm-hmm. Funny as hell. Like, just so charming. Such a sweet person.
Yeah.
And when I had met this man, J2, he was an active addict. He was actively addicted to heroin. He was actively drinking, but he was a functioning addict. Mm. Very functioning addict.
And that's more dangerous.
Yeah. And I mean... You know, when you're a server, certain things are a big deal. I'll never forget the night that, like,
make sure you're talking to your mic.
Oh, well, excuse me.
No, you're good. It just
excuse me, sorry.
No, you're good. It just ends up, like, when you move, it travels left to right.
I'm a very, like, expressive, like, I'm moving my hands right now, and you guys can't see me, but I'm an expressive talker.
I love it. Yes, so working in the restaurant.
Anyway, so working in the restaurant, I'll never forget, like, there was one night he just, like, left me alone with, like, the whole restaurant. I was like, oh, cool. Okay, well...
Wait, was he your superior?
He was. So, I mean, like, you know, there's, he was the closer that night, and mm-hmm. I wasn't the closer, and I basically, like, got left with the tables. And he ended up getting fired after that because he had kind of royally fucked up, and he would show up to work late all the time, and he had a girlfriend at the time. She was also our coworker, and they would fight, and it was just, it was nasty. I loved this place I worked in. I was a sassy little bitch when I was 18. I got away with murder. It was awesome.
Love it. Get after it.
And then I grew up and became a hairstylist. Mm-hmm. But so I had run into him that summer, and he was like, hey, like, how's it going? Like, long time no see. Like, let's get together. And so we started talking, and the restaurant we worked in was closing. And so a bunch of us got together and went and had drinks in this area. And he walked me to my car, and he was like, hey, would love to see you again. So
with his girlfriend, without his girlfriend.
Like, okay. So him and his girlfriend had long broken up. This is fast forward. So I met him when I was 18, fast forward to when I was 25.
Oh, okay.
So 7 years had gone by.
Oh.
And him and his girlfriend had broken up, lived completely separate lives. She was in a totally different new relationship.
Yeah.
Whatever. So he, asked me to hang out again, and we did. We went to the fair, mm-hmm. the OC fair,
very
which
cute.
Is not even a thing now.
I know, so sad.
So sad. But and he kissed me, and I was like, holy shit, like, I always thought this guy was hot. And, you know, we started dating, and we got to know each other, and he was like, I'm no longer on drugs, but I do still drink. And I was like, okay, like, I've been with somebody who's, like, already, you know, done this, and they still drink. Like, it's fine. Like, we're mm-hmm. fine. Like, I'm 25. I want to be with someone who can, like, go out and have fun and drink and go to breweries and go to
bars.
Have
a good time, yeah.
Whatever. Have a good time. I mean, and he's super social, like, super funny, like, got along with all of my friends. You never met him, but I'm not sorry you never met him because you're not missing anything.
That's okay. I think I met you at the tail end of that relationship.
You did meet me at the tail end of the relationship. And so... The relationship was great for a long time. Then he got fired from his job and he went into a deep, dark depression. Like, literally, I had to pry him off the couch, pry him out of bed. I mean, we had a great summer together. Went to the pool, went to the beach, went to the dog beach, went to the fair, like, went to Disneyland. I mean, it was great. Total honeymoon phase.
Yeah.
But then life got real. And he ended up moving to, I'm sorry, but I love to call it Shitville. Lake Elsinore.
Not wrong. Ugh.
If you live in Lake Elsinore and you're listening to this, get the fuck out. Anyway. Anyway, so he ended up moving out there and moving in with his also addict father.
Yeah.
And the drinking just went from zero, not even zero, because he drank and he could drink socially and hold his liquor, but zero to 100. And I would spend weekends out there with him. And I just remember there were so many sloppy nights mm-hmm. that I would be like, why am I here?
Yeah.
Like he would be stumbling or, babe, bleh, and like want to have sex. And I'm like, this isn't sexy. Like, yeah. I don't want to have sex with you. You're sloppy. Your dick is soft. Like, no thanks. Nothing's off limits here, right?
Bitch, get weird with it. All right. Talk about clits, piercings, soft dicks, nipple rings. I don't care.
All right.
Tom squirting, whatever. Get
whatever.
Weird.
Whatever. I mean, I will say we had a very fulfilling sex life. I mean, up until now that I've experienced other things, it was the best sex I've ever had. My body responded to his body in ways that I never knew it could.
Meow.
And I always used to joke with him, like, one day if I hate you, like, I'm just going to stick around because the sex is so good. Mm-hmm. I mean, now I'm like, huh, that's funny. Funny joke.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, so when he moved out there, it was where it really got bad. And he had this friend. And I had hung out with this friend and his girlfriend. Okay, let me rewind. I'm sorry. Okay. So
take it back.
Early into our relationship, this is actually a key important thing. Early into our relationship, we decided to go to Palm Springs together for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I should have seen this as a red flag, but he was like, can you drive? And I was like, wait, you don't have a car?
I have a story for this, but yes, go.
And he's like, no, I don't have a car. I sold my car. I needed to save some money. And I was like, that's weird. You're 28 years old and you don't have a car? Okay. And then his friend and his girlfriend were coming with us. And like his friend drove him around all the time everywhere and they did everything together. And I was like, your friend doesn't have a car either? And he's like, no, that's his dad's car. I was like, okay. So then he had this girlfriend and she was actually really nice, but she was living in a halfway house. Mm. Also a recovered addict. So we all go to Palm Springs together. Okay. And the first night, we're like, woohoo, we're here. Like, we cooked dinner because it had a kitchen. And we're like, great time, like, whatever. And I go to bed kind of early because I'm a morning person. I've trained myself to be one.
Well, we're grandmas.
We're grandmas. So, I mean, we get in bed. We have sex. I fall asleep. I wake up at 1 and there is a party raging of the three of them out in the living room of this villa that we're in. And I'm like, this is weird. I'm like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, oh, he's like, babe, look, we're drinking. We're having a good time. And they're smoking cigarettes on the patio. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going back to bed. This is weird.
Yeah.
So I wake up at like 7 the next morning and he's passed out next to me. I go to the pool by myself and he's like, comes down 3 hours later. And he's like, yeah, I was like out at the pool at 3:30 in the morning, like raging. And I was like, this is not normal, but okay.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, on this trip, the recovered alcoholic / addict girlfriend ends up drinking and telling us later that she relapsed and she started drinking. I actually kind of forgot about this. So her sponsor is like, homegirl, you got to come home.
Yeah.
And so I was like, we're maybe not going to spend as much time with these people now that I know this situation. So anyway, fast forward back to him moving to Lake Elsinore. So he had this friend. It was his best friend. And he'd be, this is my brother. And he had said, oh, so-and-so's using again. And I was like, why? And for me, this is kind of like where the addiction, I don't want to say light bulb, but I was kind of like, here's the difference between you and me. And he's like, well, he's like really having a rough time, babe. Like he's like really going through it. And I said, so because he's having a rough day and he's stressed out, he's just going to shoot up some heroin? Well, yeah, I mean, that's like, that's how he copes. Like that's what makes him feel better. And I'm like, what? Huh?
No. An addict. A human desperate to cope.
For reals. And I'm like, no, this is not going to work for me. When I'm stressed out or I'm having a shitty day or I'm quote unquote going through it, I go for a fucking walk. I take my dog to the park. I read a book. I don't want to say normal because that's kind of fucked up. But like, that is what a non-addict person would do.
Yeah. But I think what's important to recognize here too is like, right, the chemical imbalance that addicts typically deal with, and like, it is a disease. So when you really look at it, and like, in the grand scheme of things, they don't know any different, because in their mind, that's the only thing they know to cope. So no matter if you, a sober person that's logical, is coming up and saying, you know what, I go for a run, or I go for a walk, I get some sunlight, some vitamin D, whatever that might be, to them, it's not like it's not the puzzle piece that they're missing.
Well, right? they don't get it.
No, they don't. And they have to be clean for years and years to come. They have to put in the work. They have to do the work. They like cannot be triggered by anything that says need of substance.
Right.
And that's like the hard part. But you're right. Right. Like, that's where you can, for somebody that maybe could be in this relationship, that's where that light bulb can go off and say, holy shit, I think maybe the person that I'm with or seeing or conversing to, whatever, is an addict or has those tendencies, because that is not a typical reaction to something like that.
Well, and for him to be like, well, he's just going through it, babe. I'm like, no, that's gonna be a no from me. Like, no. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why do you think this is okay? And again, I don't have the same chemical imbalance in my brain. I don't have an addictive bone in my body. And for me, I was just like, I mean, even now I still ponder that years later. Mm-hmm. And he just started heavily drinking. So he ended up working in construction out in Lake Elsinore. There's really not a whole lot to do out there except for drink and do drugs. It's the meth, the meth capital of, I don't know where, but it's a meth capital of somewhere. Anyway.
California?
I mean, yeah, Southern California.
Yeah.
And he just turned into Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, when he was sober, and I mean, his family will attest to this too. When he was sober, he was a sweetheart. He was hilarious. I mean, he just, my friends had a great time with him. Like, I had a group of friends, and one of them, we all had worked together, and we introduced him, you know, to her husband and all of our other friends. And like, we had a great time together. It was a lot of fun. But when he was drinking and when he fell heavily into the alcoholism, he was ugly. And I remember, so his dad had been an addict for a long time, had been in and out of prison, had physically touched women in an abusive way. I mean, he was not a good man. He had a big swastika tattoo on his chest. Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh, yeah. When I met him and he walks out with his big beer belly shirtless, I was like, this is your father?
Oh, my God. My, like, literally heart just sank into my ass.
No. And I had no respect for this man. And I told him, just because of that symbol on your father's body, I can't.
Oh my God.
And I'm spending time under his roof, but I don't feel the need to have any kind of relationship with him. I don't have any respect for him. And clearly he doesn't give a shit about me because he's not investing any time in me. So fuck your dad.
No, there's no.
And
that just shows enough character right there.
Right. And I mean, he had a really removed relationship from his dad for a long time. Mm-hmm. So, but it's hard because you're in a relationship with somebody and you want to, they love their parent or whoever. And you're like, okay, well, this is your father, so I guess I have to try. Anyway, I mean, that became his drinking buddy. And he would light me up. Oh, where are you? What are you doing? When are you going home? Why aren't you with me? You don't love me anymore. Manipulation after manipulation after manipulation. Well, you're out having fun and I'm just stuck here. And I'm like, you're the dumb fuck that moved to Shitville. So I don't know what to tell you. Mm-hmm. He had my location and he would constantly use it against me. I don't believe that you're at work. I'm like, it's 2:30 on a Thursday afternoon. Where the fuck else would I be?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hello? And
so he would like thrive on these like crazy bouts of like, I don't know, say like psychosis, but like,
he was manipulation just
patterns, right?
Like manipulation, he would almost patterns.
Like, he would like salt the wounds all the time, and he would just like try to pick and argue and start these fights that were absolutely unnecessary.
And I would go out there on Tuesday nights, because who doesn't love a Taco Tuesday, and like spend Taco Tuesday with him.
For us basic bitches out here in Orange County, yeah.
But I would go out there on Tuesday nights, and he would get out of his truck, and he would already have a beer. And I'm like, you're drinking and driving. And he's like, oh, well, I just need a beer, babe. Like, work was stressful. Then he would come home and he'd be like, can you take me to the liquor store down the street? And he would go get a six pack and drink the whole six pack. Then we would go to dinner and he would order two beers and two shots. And I'm like, huh?
There's no enjoyment.
There, well, and I'm just like, you go from 0 to 100. You go from my sweet, loving, like, hey, babe, so happy to see you, to fucked up. And then you want to fuck me? Ew.
And no. Then cuss you out and call you a cunt.
Exactly. Well, that was Juwan, J1. This is J2.
Well, and so he didn't have, like, verbal abuse patterns.
Not this one, did yet.
He? Oh, okay. We're getting
not
there.
Yet.
Okay, because I was going to say, I was like, I've been with you, I think, while you were doing my hair and you were getting texts that were, like, abusive.
Oh, he would... I mean, the abuse started later. So, he also struggled with depression as well. And, I mean, we could do a whole nother situation on depression because I don't really totally understand depression. I've never suffered from it, but...
And that's okay. You don't have to go into that part, but like, you're making a statement for him.
I'm making a statement for him. He also suffered from depression. And he always said the alcohol made him feel better when he got back home from work.
Which is kind of crazy because alcohol is a depressant. And I know for myself, right,
to open the next bottle of wine. Wait, can you hear?
Yeah, dude. She's like right at the mic. One of the things that I actually found out this year, which is kind of crazy, you can hear it even if you don't do it into the mic. I'm gonna let you not pour that one. But one of the things that I found out this year too, just like a half glass, so I'm good, thank you.
You don't have to drive. This is your home.
This is my home, but I also had wine last night too. Wow, at this point, I'm just. What else are we doing in quarantine other than masturbating and drinking?
I have a wine fridge in my apartment. I drink wine every night.
We're
going
to just cheers to that bad boy. And we just talk about alcoholism. But.
Ooh, that's good.
This is a nice one.
Never rush a great wine.
I know. We're drinking Slow Press Cab. It's delightful.
Oak barrel aged vintage.
Would you mind closing that bottle?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. But something that I've actually like learned about myself this year, which... It's something that I've always knew, but I've never analyzed. So every single time that I drink and drink more than maybe like, say like a glass or two of wine, right? Where you're kind of like in like a slight inebriated phase. Like I'm not ever the type of person to get like just fucking smashed, but
mm-hmm. Me either.
And I'll get to a point where I'm like, I should probably stop drinking. And while most people don't know that I'm hammered, quote unquote hammered, right? Like they just look at me and they're like, holy shit, like Marie, you kind of just like look tired. I feel like I just kind of get this weird gloss in my eyes. And what happens is that the next day I'm in a depressive state for the entirety that I'm awake. And I remember...
But alcohol is a downer.
It is. But I didn't think about it, right? Like I was just kind of like... This is how the story played out is Lisa and I were driving back from like an event or something like that. And Lisa's one of my best friends. And I remember for some reason it was like every other week, like her and I would just like go to these events. She was always like my plus one. We'd have fun together. We'd drink, you know, one of us would drive like that next morning. We'd stay wherever just to be safe. And I remember like there was like this constant where it was like every Sunday, because we'd go out on a Saturday, I would text her and be like, I'd say something depressing. And then I'm like, dude, like, I'm so sorry. Like, I feel like I'm just like such a downer today or something like negative.
Yeah.
And after a couple weeks of this, she goes, Maria, you say this to me after every single time that you drink, it's okay. And that's when it kind of clicked that I was like, holy shit. Like, it's one thing to realize and understand that alcohol is a depressant. But when you literally understand that it puts you in a depressive state, that almost changes your whole understanding of what it means to like drink and how much you drink. And the fact that it took me till year 29 to kind of like even process that, I think is very shocking. And my issue is that a lot of people never in their entire life really even have that process. So, or like have that like process thought. And so that's why it's a little shocking to me that J2 would like sit there and drink and he'd be like, oh, it puts me in a happy place. Because yes, it's temporary,
a Band-Aid. It numbs the pain. And I mean,
but the next day, what happens, right? Like
the next day you're hungover and you feel like shit. And I mean, he'd always be like, I'm so hungover. And I'm like, whose fucking fault is that, dumb fuck? Like,
yeah,
hello?
But is he in a depressive, like, right? Like, but you
well, then he's
in a
depressed.
Worse,
then he is back to being depressed because he's not drunk anymore. And so, I mean, the relationship was messy. I mean, he was constantly, like, he was very insecure. Even in our sex life, he was very insecure. I am, since nothing is off limits, I'm very open with what I like, what I don't like.
And you talk about this all the time.
Yeah, I love sex. And I'm confident in myself and in my body when it comes to sex. And he was very, no toys, no, don't touch me this way, don't look at me this way, because he was insecure. Now, we did have a very fulfilling sex life. with what we could work with.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Like, he didn't want you to masturbate, or he didn't want you to bring sex toys into the bedroom? No, he'd be like,
Don't own sex toys. Don't own sex toys. Don't bring sex toys into the bedroom. Don't touch yourself. Save yourself from me.
Okay, what is this, like, Sunday service?
I'm like, homeboy, don't you want to sext me? Like, it's fun once in a while when I can't see you all the time. I don't want to drive to Shitville every week, and, like, he was never willing to come to me.
I mean, I personally don't want to get a dick pic because, to be honest, your hard rod is, like, really not that hot for me. Like, I can honestly, like, tell you how many times all my girlfriends have received, like, a dick pic, and we've all showcased around, all laughed over wine. So, to be honest,
I got a good dick video in my phone, but...
I want to see it.
I actually will show it to you. Yeah. I was kind of like, I literally...
We're worse than males.
I literally recorded my reaction, and I was like, my face was like...
But I
like this dick. This is a good dick.
Okay. Okay.
Cool. Anyway. Okay. So back to the shit show. Yes, You're fine. We have ADD.
We do.
But
I just wanted to know.
I mean, I don't even know where we left off. But let me just name a few incidents in this relationship so that other people understand that like these things do happen. So there was a time. So his father, being the addict that he was, he had a lot of health issues.
Yes.
Mainly being his heart. And I remember his dad was going in. I don't remember what kind of heart surgery it was. But he was going in for a heart surgery. And I remember sending him a text and saying, everything's going to be okay. Like, I love you. I'm here for you. Don't stress. Like, everything will be all right. You know, I love you no matter what. And my parents actually never knew I was in a relationship with him.
I remember this. And this was so huge for you.
This is huge. And they actually still don't know. And it's probably something I'll never share with them because I don't feel like this is a point in my life that needs to really be, this is a point in my life that I can openly talk about now, but there's just some things that certain people in your life don't need to know.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. And he's like, do your parents know that you love me? And I was like, well, no, they don't. And my parents were very against our relationship because of my relationship with J1, and they knew the addictive tendencies and the abuse and the manipulation, and my mom having so much experience with addiction in her life. I mean, she was just a flat out no, did not approve. And they also knew back in the day when I was 18, when I had met J2, that he was an active addict. Mm-hmm. So, but I had fallen in love with him and I couldn't walk away. I was constantly drawn in because he was addicted to me. And I was like, I was his drug. And he was like, oh, I love you. You're the beautiful flower that I've been searching for.
Been there.
So anyway, he had said, do your parents know that you love me? And I said, no. And he goes, this is fucked up. You're fucked up. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't remember the exact words, but he went off on me. He called me and was like, I don't want to talk to you. You're ashamed of me. You don't love me. You're a piece of shit. Yada, yada. Like, fuck off. And I'm like, I'm sorry. All I was doing was trying to be supportive and be there for you. And a few days had gone by, and I remember calling you crying after this. And there's a casino out in Shitville. Mm-hmm. And he would regularly go there and just get fucked up, wasted. Yeah. And I would constantly track his location because at this point, he had started to go downhill, drinking every single day. Now, if you come home from work and you have 6-pack of beers and a shot and more beers, you have a problem.
And every day.
Every single day.
This is not like a Saturday.
No. Folks. And I mean, like, I come home from work once in a while and like my roommate will have a bottle of wine open and like I'll have a glass of wine with dinner. I mean, even every weekend I don't go out drinking because I am not a good drinker. You guys all make fun of me because I am one and done.
You are. So, but then again, we don't smoke, so like you
see, and now I will smoke a couple joints by myself.
See,
so
but that is
my choice.
Yes.
So
this is literally a liver killer. Although I mean,
isn't weed supposed to be a brain cell killer?
And I mean, yeah, but you're not like a functioning.
At least
like,
it comes from the ground, right? Oh no, I don't smoke. Like I don't go to work high.
I mean, it's like
I told you. Like if I know I'm not gonna go to work, go somewhere for a couple hours. If we're laying by the pool, I might have like a little puff puff or a little edible, or like if it's at night and I'm gonna go to sleep or I'm hanging out. Yeah. Whatever.
I'm for the record, like I think cannabis is one of the most like powerful drugs, and like the thing is like I am just not down with like pharma drugs most of the time. I think that
there's a lot of funky chemicals and shit that we don't know anything about in there.
But I worked in cannabis for a really long time. I worked in B2B, I worked in packaging, we were like one of the like number one like can of packaging producers. So I mean, I get it.
For sure.
Yeah. But so, anyways.
So anyway, so he was a big stoner too. And I mean, he had told me that that was his substitute for the heroin. And I mean, more on that later. But he called me that night. It was a Friday. And he called me and he said, "Where the fuck have you been?" And I was like, "Excuse me? Where the fuck have I been?" I said, "I haven't heard from you in 2 days." And he's like, "You know what? You're just fucked up. You're fucked up and you're embarrassing." He's like, "I can't believe I'm with you. You're embarrassing as fuck." Yep. And hung up on me. And I called you crying.
Yeah, you did. And I remember was this. Like, I'll never forget.
I mean, I was like, again, who talks to somebody they love like this? Mm-hmm. And I mean, it just got worse and worse. And I mean, not to drag it on, but that we didn't talk for 6 days. Now, yeah. We used to talk all day, every day. And he came groveling back. "I love you. Hey, babe." I mean, I broke. I finally broke. I had so much anxiety and I was freaking out and I was crying. And I remember going to therapy and crying to my therapist. And she was like, "You got to do whatever's best for you."
Yeah.
And so finally I was like, okay, this is my person. Like, I need to talk to my person. Like, you know, I'd had a couple rough days at work. Like, life just gets to you sometimes. And so finally I called him to confront him, to be like, "Why would you do this to me?" And he completely acted like nothing had happened. Like, he was like, "Hey, babe, like, where you been? Are you coming out here this weekend?" And I was like, "I'm sorry, are you on crack? I mean, haha. But, like, are you crazy? Do you know what you said to me? Like, you hurt me." "Oh, sorry, I was drunk."
What?
Excuse me?
That's not an excuse.
No, and I mean, I was naive. Your love is so blind. And I was so far deep. And I had followed this man for a year and a half at this point, like, into this not nice place of California. Yeah. And I was driving, you know, it's 50 miles to get there from where I lived. I was driving back and forth constantly because he wouldn't come to me. And I don't have any money. I can't do this. And I was sending him money for gas, for food. Babe.
So, but do you feel that you were also, like, enabling his actions?
Yeah, I was probably was, but I didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
Because love is blind. And two, I was afraid that he was going to say those things to me again. So I thought if I kept him happy, and it got to the point where I would go out there and we would have dinner, I'd be like, "Okay, like," or I'd be like, "No, don't drink tonight. Like, just be sober with me." And then he would get all pissy and I'd be like, "Okay, fine. Like, just like one beer and one shot." And I would start enabling him because I was afraid of what he would say to me. And there were so many nights of, like, how I had talked about earlier, where he would be so sloppy and he would, like, I remember one time he took off all of his clothes and I'm just, like, sitting there looking at him like, "Yes." And he ended up falling off the bed, like, onto the floor, like, sloppy as fuck. And I was like, this isn't sexy. Like, it's gross. And I'm sober because at this point I'm turned off from drinking because I don't, why? And I ended up being the sober driver in the DD. I mean, for the record, he didn't have a car. Again, I had the car. And this went on. I mean, then a few weeks later, he said, "You're fucked up. No one will ever want you when I'm done with you." No one. Your daddy bought you your career for you. Now, anyone who knows me knows how much I love my job and how hard I have worked for it.
Yeah.
And no one handed it to me. And that's what's amazing to me is I get to sit back and be like, I built this empire. And for him to shit on it and go, "Your daddy bought you your career. You've never worked for anything in your life. You know, your daddy paid for all of your supplies and all of the things that you do." And being a hairdresser is fucking expensive. And guess what? I bought all of that shit. My daddy didn't buy me my career. No one buys you your clients. You fucking hustle. So fuck you for saying, "Oh, it was all handed to you. Your daddy bought it for you. You're nothing. No one's going to ever want you when I'm done with you. You're a waste. You're a piece of shit." And it, like, tears something out of your soul when the person you love is shitting on your character like that.
Your character, your career, everything that you have built in life. Like,
I am a good person. I have a huge heart. But I, and again, I can repeat this story back to you because I also have an insanely good memory and I will remember. I mean, I can still hear his voice in my head saying this to me. And I can sit here and tell you my story and it doesn't affect me the same way because I've done a lot of healing. But it continued. And then this time we didn't talk for 10 days. And he came back and was like, hey, like, how's it going? Haven't heard from you in 10 days. Like, I love you. What are we doing for your birthday? Huh?
And what delusion?
Like, are you crazy? So, I mean, this shit went on and on and on. You're fucked up. You're embarrassing. You're fat. You're, no one will want your body after I've touched it.
Oh my God.
You're not smart. You're not independent. No one, everyone handed you this shit. You're not a real adult because you live at home. Okay, I'm sorry, but sometimes it's a little expensive to live on your own in Southern California.
Dude,
I do live on my own now, but...
But everybody at our age, even now, like, is moving back home. Like, it's so expensive. Because it's so expensive. Nobody can afford rent. It's so expensive.
And I mean...
It's like $1,700 for a single bedroom out in, you know, the cities that we want to live in. And that's supposed to be 30% of your paycheck. Not everybody is making over $75K, $80K, $90K, whatever that may be. A lot of people are literally making $40, $50K. Like... That's like a paycheck to paycheck living situation plus car plus school loans plus whatever the fuck else. Like, that's unfair.
Well, and it's like, you know what, motherfucker? You're living with your piece of shit dad in Shitville. Yeah. You don't have a car. You work an under the table cash job and don't pay taxes like a real citizen. Yeah. So, hello. Like, no. You don't get to shit on me and how I run my life.
Yeah.
And... I mean, we eventually broke up. I decided I was done. I grew some balls. I turned my emotions off. And it was kind of like sticks and stones may break my bones and words will never hurt me. And I finally was just like, nope. And like, he would say things to me and I'd be like, okay, cool. Then I wouldn't react anymore because I had nothing left. I had cried all of the tears. I had screamed. I ran out of a voice. I ran out of tears. I was depleted of emotions at this point. And that's when I was like, fuck this. I am better. And I grew the strength and I grew the power. And I, you know, from the people in my life, like who loved me and who, you know, friends and family. I mean, my family didn't know what was going on, but friends, therapy, people in my life. And I ended our relationship. And he tried to come back multiple times.
Of course, because that's all he knew. He knew your separation times and he could come back, tell you he loved you, and then you'd say, okay.
Because I loved him. I loved him so much. And then the beginning of our relationship, I was like, oh my God, this man is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, he has his shit together. He's cleaned up his act, and he had OD'd on his mom's birthday is what scared him into being clean but not sober.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you imagine being that mother and getting the call on your birthday that your son OD'd? Like, how heartbreaking is that? And so after we broke up in December. So we are now in December of 2020. We broke up in December of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And just a few days shy of my birthday. And he did reach out and wish me a happy birthday. But he sent me... the song Nothing Compares to You. I think it's initially a Sinead O'Connor song, but he sent it. It was the Chris Cornell version.
Sure.
And was like, listen to this. This is how I feel. And I'm like, don't manipulate me, stupid fuckhead. So, you know, and I mean, that was the end of 2019. I moved on with my life, but he called me. Well, back up. So, you know, 2019, whatever. We're like, woohoo, 2020 is going to be our year. Okay, so we go into 2020 and then we end up in this shit show of a pandemic. And I mean, this part is important to me as a person, but we go into this shit show of a pandemic and we're all forced to face things that we didn't face before.
Totally.
I mean, for me, I was excited to like get on dating apps because I hadn't been single since I was 22.
Yeah.
And like Tinder was the only thing that existed at the time. And so I was like, I'm going to start dating. And like, I was numb. I didn't feel anything. Like, we broke up and I had turned off my emotions and I was like, I'm a date. Because, like, I don't know what dating is. And honestly, what, almost a year later, still don't understand dating. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, we out here making it happen, baby.
That's why we're here today.
That's what it's all about.
But, like, I started dating and then the pandemic happened and I was forced to sit alone with my thoughts. And it drowned me. The numbness wore away. And I was broken. He broke my soul. Like, to listen to somebody you love with your whole heart say these horrible words to you, mm-hmm. and shit on your character and shit on who you are and shit on your soul, essentially. It breaks you into a million tiny pieces. And so with the pandemic, you know, beginning in March, I was forced to face that. And it was a blessing and a curse, because a curse being like, holy shit, now I actually have to feel this. I wasn't ready for that. I mean, it hit me like a freaking tsunami. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard. But you know what? I healed.
Yeah.
I healed. And I mean, I've been in therapy for the last 4 years. So when J1 and I were together after the end of our relationship, I kind of like lost my shit. And I was really struggling with things that I didn't understand what I was struggling with. And that's when I started going to therapy. And going to therapy made me stronger at the end of this relationship, because I knew how to cope with it, even though I was broken. And so my whole point is that I'm on the outside now looking in, and I have a lot of trauma. I really do. And it has made dating really hard for me, because I am constantly looking over my shoulder.
Yeah.
And I mean, now I'm like, now I ask men, have you ever struggled with any kind of alcohol or substances? And you know what? Like, we're not getting any younger. Like, I feel like now we need to be honest with each other. We need to be honest and be like, yeah. And if you're not a bad person if you've struggled with this. And again, you're not a bad person if you're still struggling with this. But it's a matter of what you do with it and what you say and how you hurt and affect other people. And I mean, it's just...
I think it's important to understand those patterns.
It's important to understand the patterns. So the patterns being the manipulation, the constant back and forth, the I'm going to give you this and I'm going to take it away.
Yeah.
And then the like, when it's good, it's so fucking good. And when it's bad, it's a fucking disaster.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, addicts go on a high and they're high, 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 high. And then they come crashing down.
Yeah.
And he was on a high for so long. And then when he lost his job, he just came trickling down and then just hit rock bottom. And so he actually called me in April. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't heard from him since December. So he called me in April of 2020. Repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And he used to do this when we were together. He would blow me up constantly.
I remember this.
And he said that he still loved me. And I think in April, I was still kind of in that strange, like, healing, like, not understanding what I was doing pattern. And so I don't know if I still loved him. Even now, I don't love him anymore now, I can tell you that. But he basically called me to verbally abuse me all over again and tell me I was fucked up and I was an idiot and I was never going anywhere in my life. And again, I wasn't a real adult because I still lived at home, which... Hello, ding dong. I'm a hairdresser and I was shut down at that point. So thank God I lived at home.
And also not his business. You're not together.
None of his business. Yeah. And he technically lived at home too.
Exactly.
So.
Har, har, har.
Har, har, har. But, and he called to tell me that he relapsed after we broke up because he couldn't handle the fact that I left him and he overdosed.
Again.
And it was my fault.
Mm. Do you... So a pivotal point here too is I remember that he was suicidal.
Oh, I mean, there's a whole story I didn't tell in there. So.
Yeah, I wanted to see if like that's something that we can cut this part out. But yeah, if you're open to it.
No, we don't need to cut this part out.
Okay.
But I do want to talk about this because this is where this was ugly. And a lot of my friends were actually around for this. So there was a night in October. Now, mind you, we broke up in December and I haven't actually seen him since October of 2019. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see him for the last 2 months of our relationship. The second to last time I saw him, one of our friends had a housewarming party. And so we went from their housewarming party in Costa Mesa to a brewery in Tustin.
Yeah.
And he proceeded to get fucked up drunk at this brewery. And he was planning to drive back to Lake Elsinore from Tustin.
Oh my God.
That's 45 minutes.
Wasted.
So my friends were like, he can't drive. And I'm like, he can't drive. And I remember telling the waitress, please stop serving him. Now, he drank IPAs. IPAs are...
7% and over.
Yeah, heavy alcohol content.
Love me a good IPA.
I know you do. Nothing wrong with that.
Cold, hard bitch.
Nothing wrong with that. But he got super drunk at the brewery and got in the car. And I was like, please, like, just... I'll take you to your mom's. His mom lives in Fountain Valley. I was like, I'll drive you to your mom's. Like, it's no big deal. Like, It's totally fine. Like, you just stay at your mom's house and drive home in the morning. Like, I'll come get you. We can have breakfast. You can take your car. Whatever. Nope. I'm going home. So he called me when he was on the 91. And he's, babe, I took a wrong turn and now I'm on the 241 heading towards San Diego Canyon. Now, I lived off of San Diego Canyon at the time. And I was like, what? And I mean, if you've ever been on the 91, like going towards that way, mm-hmm. like the 241's on the right.
Yeah.
And so he must have just veered to the right. And he's like, well, I pulled over because I had to pee. I'm like, oh my God, you pulled over on the side of the freeway because you had to pee? Okay, that's a real great sign of drunk driving, but sounds good. And so I remember telling him, like, okay, we'll get off the 241. Well, can you pay my toll bill? No, I'm not paying your toll bill. Pay your own damn toll bill. You're a 29-year-old adult. I'm not paying your toll bill. So he ended up getting back on the 241 on the opposite direction, like going back towards the 91 and driving home drunk. But meanwhile, while he's driving, he's telling me, I'm just going to end it all. Like, no one loves me. Like, I'm a worthless piece of shit. And I mean, I can tell you now he is a worthless piece of shit, but we weren't going to tell him that at the moment. But he kept saying, I'm just going to end it all. I won't be missed. No one loves me. Yada, yada. So he gets home and he pulls in the driveway and he goes, I'm going to kill myself. And I was like, what? No, you're not. And when you love somebody, it's gross. Like when somebody wants to kill themselves or talks about wanting to kill themselves. And he's like, I'm just going to end it all. Like, I'm just going to just stick a bullet to my head. No, I don't think he even had a gun, but.
Well, I'm going to just backtrack on just the language part. To confirm this, I think the narrative is not that it's gross. It's just the fact that somebody, I think, could in this state, you know, one, they're manipulating you, right? They're not depressive and suicidal because like that's how they've been. They are manipulating you to believe that this is a way that they're going to get you back. So they're going to act suicidal and then they're going to make it your fault.
Well, at that time, that wasn't how I saw it. It genuinely scared me.
Yes. No, I'm just saying in general because I think that language could just be deemed very wrong. And I say that because I just had a dear, like a friend pass. So I think that can be like super sensitive in a lot of ways. So I just want to like bring clarity to the statement as to why now from the outside and looking had happened in that situation. That's, I think for you in that moment where you're like, what the fuck? Like, how could somebody ever make me feel so responsible when I know that, again, they're manipulating me when we're not even like together, right? So
and at just, the moment, I yes. didn't understand that.
Yes.
So for sure. You're totally right. You're totally right. What was I just saying? Oh, and he kept saying, I'm going to end it all. I'm going to end it all. And I was like, I'm calling the cops. I'm calling your mom. I'm calling your roommate.
Yep.
Freaking the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurts. It pulls at your heartstrings because you're just like, no, I can't imagine my life without you. And I mean, he obviously didn't kill himself. Thank goodness. But like, it was just, it was hard. It was really hard to hear that.
Yeah.
But
somebody so young and in their 20s, like going through a situation like that, none of us are conditioned to even understand how to like handle or respond to somebody that's saying that to you in a drunken state where I think anything can be possible because they're so far gone that like you, no matter what you say is not going to resonate with them.
No, the light bulb's not going to go on.
No.
And I mean, that was one particular instance. And there was a lot of manipulation involved in that. I don't know if you would call that abuse. It could still be called abuse, but there was a lot of manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And he,
I would still think manipulation is abuse.
Manipulation is abuse because you're trying to alter somebody's mm-hmm. thinking.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. I mean, clearly he did not kill himself, but I don't know where he is today. And I don't need to know. And you know what? I wish him all the best, but I do think he is definitely actively using.
Mm-hmm.
So he had called me in June. Or I'm sorry, he had called me in April. And he did call me again in June. And this time I didn't call him back.
Yeah.
I had told him in April, please don't call me again. And he had asked, he had told me, well, he had called to blow me up and abuse me again. And then told me that he relapsed and he OD'd. And then he asked if we could get back together. And I was like, no.
But that's the thing is like, right, it's from one drug to another. It's
you relapse, then you have to be sober, so you go to the next thing because you were another drug to him.
Yeah. And if I go to rehab, can we get back together? I'm like, no. I won't do this anymore. I don't want to be with somebody who I shouldn't be the reason that you want to be sober. You should be the reason you want to be sober.
But I think it's so far past that too. I think in this point, you have to look at your own mental, emotional, and physical health and how is it affecting you? And what is this person bringing to you that's making you better? And obviously nothing. It was affecting you so negatively. Like to watch you, this like positive, beautiful, bright light be so like pulled down from like somebody who's just like consistently abusing you. And I'm not saying this because I'm like, oh, I heard your stories. I physically saw it firsthand from like the crying, from the text messages, from the calls. Like we were together so many times when these things were happening.
And so, he would blow me up and it would just be this thing. And
this is not some facade you're putting on just to say like, hey, I have this random story. No, this is like real shit that fucking happened. And it happens more than we even think it does.
Mm-hmm. And I felt alone. I felt like I couldn't, in the moment until the end.
Yes.
Until the end, I felt like I couldn't disclose this because again, when you tell your friends negative things about the person you're with, you're worried that they're not going to like them. And also, yeah. I mean, that's just a fact. But like, I also felt like an idiot because people would be like, well, then why would you stay? And it was just love is blind. I loved him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was this horrible, terrible, not tyrant, that's the wrong word, but he was this horrible, terrible Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Because when he was good, he was so good. And I loved that part of him. I loved all of him, but I mostly loved the good parts because I would wait for the bad to outweigh the bad. And he...
You're holding on to potential.
I knew what he was capable of. And I would tell him that all the time. And he was so talented. He would draw and paint these like beautiful things. And I think that was another outlet for him, but he just didn't know how to use it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at the end of the day, he called me in April, told me all those things, you know, it was weird. He went back and forth and he was like, I love you. And I'm like, then why didn't you just tell me I'm fucked up and embarrassing if you love me? And I just said, no, I think you should go to rehab for you. Mm-hmm. I don't need to be a part of your life anymore.
Yeah.
And he called in June. I never called him back. And I don't know where he is now. I still have some of his family on social media. And I do have some contact with them. But we've learned boundaries. And the pictures that I've seen of him, he does not look healthy. So I don't know. I don't want to know. I don't need to know. I wish him all the best. That is a whole different part of my life. So yeah. I'm sitting here now telling you this story back. And I can tell it to you because I have taken the time to heal. Now, my biggest point in this situation was the first relationship was ugly. And I mean, there's only so many details I can tell you because they're kind of suppressed into my brain. Mm-hmm. But the first relationship I didn't totally heal from. So I repeated the pattern and I got back into the same relationship, but it was 10 times worse. Mm-hmm. So my whole thing with this and what I hope people take away if they're repeated the same pattern that I have is take the time to look inside yourself and heal from whatever it was that broke you from these relationships so that you don't repeat the pattern. And I joke and I say, oh, haha, like, have you ever struggled with a substance or alcohol or whatever? But I'm serious because you might be a great person, but I'm sorry. I just can't do that again. And so I am dating a wonderful man now, and he does not have any of these tendencies because my heart doesn't hold on to those things anymore, and my brain doesn't hold on to those things anymore, and I have moved on.
Yeah.
And so, again, yes, I have trauma. I think I talk about this every therapy session with my therapist. And my goal is to let go of that trauma one day. But I have found somebody who doesn't make me feel that trauma. Mm-hmm. He doesn't make me feel like I'm broken. And I don't think I'm broken. I think I'm pretty damn strong.
Yeah.
And I want other women or men or whoever in this situation to know that you're strong too. And I told my roommate this the other day because when I told her I was coming on to talk to you about this, I do believe that Jason had physically touched me at some point. But I think that it is either A, buried deep somewhere very far into my brain. I think it's suppressed, or I do think that I was not conscious for it. I do remember waking up one morning being covered in bruises and not knowing why.
Yeah.
And maybe that's going to take some therapy to pull back the layers and unearth and, mm-hmm. and figure out what exactly happened. And I will, because I feel like for me, that's a part of my journey to heal from this trauma and from this, this shit show. We'll call it a shit show. So, I mean, at the end of the day, this happens all the time.
Yeah. More than we even think it
is. More than we even think it. And men abuse women. Women abuse women. Men abuse men. It's really sad. And, women, you know, abuse
men. Yeah.
It's just prevalent. Everyone. I mean, it happens. But the thing with addiction is it can have, you know, there can be butterflies and rainbows to it. If you get help and you move on and you see the light. And I mean, again, there are so many wonderful people in my life who have gotten the help that they need and recognized that they had a problem. And they live these great, amazing, fulfilled lives. And yeah. I am privileged to be a part of it. But then there are also people who just go down the freaking rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And you, it is not your responsibility to suck them back out of it.
And I think another point to this is, a lot of those people too, like the story that I was telling you is, and had a very fulfilled life, had a really great life. He had done the work, but I think he was just not cognizant of how he acted within relationships, because I think that I, like, that kind of like obsessive bond that we had was a little bit different than I think bonds that he's had since he's been sober. So again, when you just don't recognize those patterns, you're going to fall back into that. And that's just going to take work for people like that to continue to move forward and recognize that that's something that they continuously do, right? And I made it very clear when we ended things that that was, I didn't say that it's because you were an addict, but I said that he treated me in X, Y, and Z way.
Right.
And he's like, holy shit, like, I just didn't even realize that. And maybe you're right. Like, I have to look back at that. And so, like you said, right, there are so many amazing people that have done the work that have really pulled themselves out of deep, dark-seated places. But again, it's you, that person that's involved with this type of person. It's like you do, right? Ask the right questions. Be in the know and educate yourself on, like, mm-hmm. what addiction really is, what it looks like, and how it can facilitate itself in the relationship.
Well, and when it comes to dating and relationships, I'm not saying don't date somebody who has had a past like this. That is your personal choice. But yeah. I'm only sharing my experience because my experience is more common than not.
Yes.
And again, there are these wonderful people who work a program. I mean, my boss is married to a man that I think he's been sober for 40 years. And fuck he him. Is like the sweetest guy ever. And like, he loves her so much. And so there, I'm not saying like steer clear of anybody who's had an issue with addiction. I'm just saying educate yourself. And I mean, I really, my therapist all the time is like, I really think you would benefit from an Al-Anon meeting. Now, unfortunately, they're all on Zoom at the current moment. But I do plan when they open back up to go to one, because I do think that even though I have moved on and I have healed,
yeah.
I think that I can peel back the layers of the trauma by knowing that other people are in the room with me that share the same story.
Do you, if you ever want company, I would actually love to go with you.
Come with me.
Yeah.
I would, I mean, I've talked to quite a few people that are like, please, like, go. And my therapist suggests this all the time, which I know you, we have talked about therapy. I love therapy, but I think that therapy only works if you want to go to therapy. Yes. If you don't want to go to therapy and you're not open to it, it's not going to work for you. And there's totally nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But for me, because I was at the time like struggling so hard with anxiety and didn't know it was anxiety. And then having, I mean, I had a very verbally abusive boss and then getting out of a very verbally abusive relationship. Like,
yeah,
I've grown a lot as a person from therapy, but I think it's a very personal choice. And I think that it doesn't work for everybody.
No, but I think it also is important to be able to like discuss your feelings. I feel like I've actually talked about therapy in every single one of these episodes because...
But maybe this is your therapy.
This is my therapy, yeah.
Maybe you don't need a licensed LMFT to be like, hey, how do you feel today?
No, for sure. But I think...
You need us.
Yes. But I think one of the points that we're really driving home is that like, for people that are like really suffering or do have these traumas, like I want everybody to feel like it's okay. Like, I think that, again, we're seeing that it is less taboo, right, to go to therapy. But I think that it just, I will continue to repeat this till I beat it to the ground, that
it's okay, and you're not looked at as like somebody that's weak or doesn't know how to like handle themselves. I think that it's important, and I think that we just, especially with what we're going through right now, mentally and emotionally, we're not equipped. As human beings, we are not equipped. And we don't even use 90% of our subconscious mind. So how are we supposed to sit here and say that we know everything that happens within our head? Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
I have, so I mean, as far as like my clientele, I have a good chunk of my clientele, they're all therapists. So I love, like, I get free therapy all the time.
Baby, hit me some phone numbers.
And so like I have these discussions with like with these clients all the time, like, mm-hmm. you know, talking about how therapy has benefited for me, but how it might not for other people, and you know, the pros and cons of it. But anyway, I mean, I do want people to know that they're not alone in these situations.
Yeah.
But I think the important thing is to talk about it. Yeah. Tell someone you trust that you're in this situation, because I'm lucky that I was not, you know, a victim of domestic abuse as far as being hit or mm-hmm. thrown or whatever. I mean, there was an incident when I was younger. That's a whole nother story. But it's important to talk to people, because you got to get out. Mm-hmm. You have to get out of that situation.
Yeah.
And I didn't grow the strength to get out on my own. I mean, a lot of it is thanks to you, other people in my life. Like, I wouldn't have done it.
I'm not crying. You're crying.
But it's important to surround yourself with people who love you, who can build you up and go, okay, look, because when you're in a relationship with addiction and abuse, it is really hard to escape. Mm-hmm. There are all these weird, I can't even explain to you, things that like are, they're like tied up in this like big tangled, like that rubber band ball that it's just like, you look at it and you're like, this is a clusterfuck. Mm-hmm. Like it's basically like that.
Or like a Rubik's cube that you're trying like to put together.
Like
a Rubik's
cube, or like those balls that are completely made of rubber bands and you like want to take it apart and like peel back the layers. It's kind of like that. And so it's kind of like you have to have somebody help you, excuse me, either solve the Rubik's Cube or help you like peel back all the rubber bands and like make it clean again.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do that on my own. I had to find strength in the people around me who loved me and cared about me.
And people are willing to help.
People are willing to listen. Always willing to help. Always willing to listen. So if people could take away something from what I've told you today, it's A, I want you to know that you're not alone. This is very common. Your feelings are valid, 100% valid. And ask for help.
Yeah.
You won't be judged because you stayed with somebody. They manipulated you into making you stay.
Yeah.
So talk about it. Talk about it. I mean, find, even if it's one person, that wasn't even a pour. That was like a drip.
I'll tell you why I did that. I'll continue.
Okay. But talk to someone, find someone you can trust and somebody who can be your safe haven. And I'm so lucky that I had multiple people that were my safe haven. But I mean, that's what you have to do. You have to get out for the better of yourself. Mm-hmm. And those things that are being said, and you even said this to me, you know, all those things aren't true. And I knew that they weren't true. So don't ever believe what your abuser says to you, because it's not true. It's insecurity. They're projecting their insecurity onto you. 100%. They need to turn around and look in the mirror when they say these things to you. I know that I'm not a piece of shit. I know that I'm not fucked up. I know that I'm not embarrassing. And I know who I am.
Yep.
And this has helped me grow in the sense that I can, I mean, I think last year with all of this, I really grew self-confidence because I had to save myself. Mm-hmm. But after walking away from this and healing, I can confidently look in the mirror and love the person staring back at me.
Yeah.
Because
that's so powerful.
It's so powerful and it feels so fucking good. Let me tell you, it really like elevates your sex life too when you're confident in yourself.
Fuck yeah.
But like, I cannot stress that enough. Like, learn to love yourself and learn to save yourself, because you are worth it. Your self-worth, no one can take that away from you.
Yeah.
And so never let your abuser make you feel differently. Because fuck that person.
Dude.
They need to look in the mirror.
I think that is the most beautiful note to end this on.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason I poured this mini piece is that it is bad luck to cheers with water, which is what I'm hydrating with right now. So I wanted to pour like a little something, but Amanda,
Cheers.
Cheers. Your story is motherfucking powerful, and I can only hope that people, if God forbid somebody's in a situation like yours, that they find like the strength to leave and find themselves and like find the betterment that they deserve, because I think that I always say this every time, but life is motherfucking lean.
Mm-hmm. And it's way too fucking short.
It is.
Drink the wine.